From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the state's education commissioner urges parents not to opt out of this year's standardized tests. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo's reaction to the Syrian refugee crisis after the Paris terror attacks. And we report on a coalition called Rebuild New York Now. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York's education commissioner says parents who are thinking of opting their children out of standardized tests again this school year should stick with the exams because they will be different than last year's tests. But the state's teachers union and a parents group says the changes don't go far enough. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia is hoping to contain a movement that led 20% of students to boycott the 3rd through 8th grade standardized tests last spring. The commissioner, who began her job in July after the April tests were administered, says they will be different in the spring of 2016. She says teachers will have more input to review the test items and how they match up with the new Common Core standards. And Elia says due to complaints she's heard from teachers, students, and parents across the state, there will be other changes as well, including shorter tests.
So we're shortening the tests at every grade level. And another thing that I heard was some students want to keep working and they can't because they're time test. And are we really measuring whether or not they have comprehension or whether they can read quickly? So we're shifting that. So you have an enormous amount of changes coming with the assessments this spring.
The state education department is ditching the current testing company Pearson in favor of a company Questar that allows teachers to have more say in the tests. But the new company will not be in charge of the exams until the spring of 2017. In the meantime, a modified version of the controversial Pearson tests will be administered to students. And while the commissioner is not telling parents what to do, she says she hopes the effort by education officials to make the changes will influence their actions.
Parents should consider that if they make a decision for anything. We hope that that will influence them and that the teacher involvement particularly will be positive.
Elia also recommends delaying the effects of the tests on students' permanent records for 6 more months through the 2018-19 school year. She says she thinks by the 2019 and 20 school year, education officials will finally be ready to have the exam results related to the Common Core learning standards count on the children's records. The test results will still be used, though, to measure teachers' performance ratings, and a spokesman for the teachers' union says until that changes, many of the parents involved in the boycott movement will continue to opt their kids out of the tests. Carl Korn with the New York State United Teachers says the commissioner doesn't get it.
The commissioner is missing the point. It appears that she hasn't been listening to parents, and in fact, her comments indicate she's not respecting the voices of parents. The best way and the only way to have parents opt in from state tests is to delink them from teacher evaluations.
Korn says parents have been expressing that concern at a series of forums held around the state. It's part of a commission put together by Governor Cuomo to review the implementation of the Common Core standards. And he says switching to a new testing company is not going to change what teachers and some parents view as the fundamental problem, the over-reliance on the tests.
Creating incentives to teach to the test. And that's not what parents want, and that's not what educators want.
Lisa Rudley, a mother of three school-age children and part of the opt-out group New York State Allies for Public Education, agrees. And she says much more has to be done to convince parents to allow their kids to take the tests.
It's window dressing. We really need legislative change in terms of having the test scores decoupled from teacher evaluations.
Rudley says the entire Common Core standards need to be overhauled. Rudley predicts that without big changes, the opt-out movement will become even bigger. A spokesman for Commissioner Elia says she is not ruling out delinking the standardized tests from the teacher performance reviews at some point in the future. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shar talked this week. The New York Police Department says it's aware of a newly released Islamic State group video showing images of Times Square, but says there's no current or specific threat to the city. Governor Cuomo issued a statement reassuring New Yorkers that they're doing everything possible to prevent any act and that this video is an old video.
Well, it may be an old video. I don't have any doubt that the same miscreants who caused all of this havoc in France are planning to do the same thing here. I don't think it's a question of whether, but when. I do think that we're going to have to be aware for every second. I'm fascinated by the fact that both the governor and the mayor once again are playing their brand of politics. First, the mayor comes out and he says people should go out about their business and, you know, do their thing. And the governor then says New Yorkers should do their thing and be reassured. But the fact is that these people, the ISIS people, are terrible, terrible people. And they are obviously committed to the point where they're willing to kill themselves. And we've seen it over and over again, and I'm afraid we're going to see it here. But what can you do except proceed and do your own thing?
One of the people who's broken with most of his fellow Democrats on the issue of Syrian refugees is New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer.
Well, you know, Chuck Schumer, who is a great favorite of mine, I really like the guy, you know, is capable of making decisions that don't stand up. To me, he is also a brilliant man at figuring out where the electorate is. After all, he's a representative or a representative of the people, and he figures out where they are, and then he does his thing. Now, from where I'm sitting, he is a brilliant man, but wrong on this. He was wrong on the incursion into Iraq. So it doesn't mean that he's not a good guy. He is a good guy. It's just that sometimes he says things or does things that are not right.
Alan, you spoke this week with Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, who you asked about ethics reform, any chance of in the legislature, and he referenced the new Assembly Speaker, relatively new Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, and saying that he didn't think that the legislature had a stomach for more ethics reform.
I don't think they've had a stomach for any ethics reform. They're sitting there. Look, I have been saying one thing again and again, because a lot of people say to me, well, come on, Alan, you know, there are good legislators, too, and we have to honor those good legislators. And I say, I am so sorry. If the good legislators aren't calling out the bad legislators, and if they're not changing the ethical practices in the legislature, then the good legislators, I'm so, so sorry, they're bad legislators, too.
Alan, meanwhile, the federal government has completed its case at the corruption trial of former New York Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Your thoughts on that?
Well, now Silver gets to present his witnesses. You know, that's the way it works in a court. First, the prosecution tries to make the case. The defense gets to make rebuttals when they have witnesses. But now let's see who they bring up to support Sheldon Silver. You know, when people are very powerful, they've made all kinds of deals in their lives. And an awful lot of people come forward to support that person because, God forbid, they should say something that would, if they don't show up in support, which would undermine themselves. I remember trials in which people who were suspected of, you know, basically being part of the mob were brought up, and all kinds of politicians showed up to say, this is a person of good character. Then it becomes an awful lot of people who owe a lot to Sheldon Silver. After all, he may have been greedy for himself, may have been, but I can tell you one thing about this guy. He's done a lot of good for a lot of people, and now's the time they have to pay back. So we'll see who shows up.
In the continuing corruption trial, former state Senate Majority Leader, current Senator Dean Skelos. Amazing tapes being played, sometimes even bizarre wiretap conversation, as the Times puts it, but includes things like his son Adam threatening to smash the head of a person if he made him show up for a no-show job, and other damning statements about the governor and other leaders.
Well, we've said this before, but if Adam Skelos is a jerk, that's a different story than if there was a crime time planned. If, in fact, they can show that a criminal activity was occurring or that a bribe was being taken, they've got him. But if they can't show that, the only thing that's going to come out of this is that Dean Skelos has a son who's a jerk.
Finally, Alan, a poll. Two things in the poll about New York City. One, that the current mayor, Bill de Blasio's poll numbers among white voters has dipped quite a bit. And the poll also showing that half of New Yorkers say they're barely getting by.
I hate to engage in ethnic politics, but here it is. The white middle-class voters of New York are absolutely committed to their own personal safety, and who could blame them for that? I've said before these microphones before that if, in fact, people's perception is that they are not safe or that the crime rate is going up or that the murder rate is going up, they're not going to like the guy who is in charge of the city at that particular time. Now, because de Blasio is a progressive, and he is, and who believes in equality for all, and he believes in more public housing, and believes in the kinds of things that would make the city fairer, you would think that he would be very, very popular among voters who are not all alike. They don't have the same skin color and everything else. The problem is, of course, and everybody knows it, that white voters tend to vote in greater numbers than black voters do in New York. And so that is one of the reasons why you see the schism between the white and black voters when it comes to de Blasio's popularity.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Experts agree that our nation's infrastructure is aging into often unsafe conditions, and a group including several Albany area elected officials known as the Rebuild New York Now Coalition this week called on the state legislature and Governor Cuomo to address the issue in the next budget when the legislature reconvenes in January. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was at the Albany County Office Building for the announcement.
Rebuild New York Now is a partnership of supporters seeking to raise awareness about the issues impacting New York's infrastructure. They've got an eye on the state's deteriorating roads and bridges. The governor recently promised to invest $8.3 billion in state funds in the MTA's five-year capital plan, a multi-billion-dollar initiative to overhaul and upgrade the aging transit system. So the Rebuild New York Now coalition wants balance in funding plans. But it isn't really about upstate versus downstate, according to Democratic State Senator Neil Breslin of Albany.
I've been fighting people for years that we live in one state, New York. But when we see the MTA and the Big Bridge, the Tappan Zee, and other projects in the metropolitan area, we look at our roads and bridges as we drive to work and home from work. We need that help. I won't call it parity, but hopefully it'll be close to parity.
Breslin was joined by several legislators and two mayors, outgoing Troy Mayor Lou Rosamilia and Albany's Kathy Sheehan.
This is an exciting time for our region, and a healthy infrastructure is going to be essential for us to be able to capture the growth and vitality that we know we can have when we unleash the potential of this region. So we have road projects that are ready to go. We know where we need to make these investments across this region. It's not just about the city of Albany, but it's about growing our entire region and really fulfilling the potential and the promise and the dream that Governor Cuomo has talked about in really revitalizing our upstate economy. We know what we need to do. We want to be strategic in doing it. And this is about ensuring that we have parity, that we have enough funds here in upstate for us to be able to realize and grow the potential of this wonderful region and economy.
Coalition members say their goals include ensuring that upstate is safe, that jobs are created, and that residents are provided with good roads and bridges. Assemblyman John McDonald represents Albany.
The upstate legislators are united. We're working together. And our main unifying source that started last year with the support of Speaker Hastie was transportation. That's what started it. That, I think, will carry us through this coming session.
The Cuomo administration did not immediately return a call for comment. The budget is due April 1st.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Adirondack Park Agency commissioners approved a unit management plan for the Essex Chain Lakes during their monthly meeting last week. But some conservation groups say the plan violates state laws and regulations. We get more now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The Essex Chain Lakes Complex in the Central Adirondacks is part of the Forest Preserve lands obtained by New York State in 2012. The Adirondack Park Agency has classified the lands as a mix of primitive and wild forest. A unit management plan sets management guidelines for public use. Commissioners debated the plan, with State Land Committee Chair Richard Booth criticizing the proposal.
I think this should be delayed. I think this happened far too quickly at the end, and we've got to give it more time. I'm going to oppose this UMP. I do not think it is consistent with the master plan, even with the amendments that have been made.
A sticking point is whether the Polaris Bridge should remain intact and be a key part of a snowmobile trail. Commissioner Arthur Lucy.
I always believed that this corridor over the Polaris would be used for snowmobiling. And I've constantly asked for a legally defensive solution to that. Our council have done their best to create a legally defensible position on this case, but I can't agree with it. And I also can't agree with the fact that we're going to approve a unit management plan before amending either the Rivers Act or the State Land Master Plan.
That is what has Protect the Adirondacks up in arms. Executive Director Peter Bauer characterizes the approved unit management plan as widely illegal.
The Adirondack Park Agency violated a series of state laws, including the Wild and Scenic Recreational Rivers Act. They are building a new bridge over the Scenic River where motors are prohibited. They're retaining the Polaris Bridge over the Hudson where motors are prohibited. They are looking to open a road inside a wild corridor on the Hudson River, again, where motor vehicles are prohibited. And they're looking to have a float plane access only campsite on part of the Cedar River, again, where motors are prohibited. That's four ways which the Wild and Scenic and Recreational Rivers Act has been violated by this plan.
Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway accepts the core of the plan to implement land classification, but has concerns.
For the Adirondack Council, we applaud the core of the plan, which still protects the Essex Chain of Lakes, but we and others are very concerned about having new public snowmobile use going across the Hudson River on the Polaris Bridge. We appear to have lost that fight on that policy decision. We feel there were better alternatives. Those advocating for snowmobiles in the town felt strongly it was critical to be able to use the Polaris Bridge.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe notes that in the past the land was productive forest, and towns got income from that and from leasing hunting cabins.
The towns believe it's very important that there be broad recreational use on the land in the states and mitigate some of that loss. And probably the most critical thing is the winter economy is pretty visible if you don't have winter sports like snowmobiling. It would be much cleaner to do several amendments to the State Land Master Plan and to the Wild, Scenic, and Recreational Rivers Act before that promise to do these amendments after the fact.
The unit management plan passed on a vote of 8-2. There are eight main lakes in the Essex Chain Lakes complex. The 785-acre area includes 10 miles of the Hudson River and 4 miles of the Cedar River.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Thank you.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new online tool will allow victims of crime in upstate New York to more easily find the legal help and services they need. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
The New York State Office of Victim Services has announced that $1 million in federal funding will help create an online portal to connect crime victims with local services. The grants were awarded by the U.S. Department of Justice. OVS Director Elizabeth Cronin said the Crime Victims Legal Network is needed to help victims navigate the legal system. Cronin said the service will be especially valuable for the underprivileged.
What we have found in New York is that there's really a disparate patchwork of services that are available to people, and they're kind of siloed so that, you know, there's family court, there's immigration, there's housing court. I mean, it's very hard for people, especially those who lack resources, to understand all the different systems that are out there and how to access them.
The network will cater to the 57 counties outside of New York City. Cronin says it can be more difficult for victims in rural parts of the state to locate and access services than people in New York City.
60% of the New York State population lives outside of New York City, but yet it accounts for 55% of reported crime. And, you know, as you know, so much of New York is rural. There's very low-income areas, and there's a lot of need for legal services in these areas, and it's much more difficult for people to get access to them.
According to the State Office of Court Administration, about 2.3 million New Yorkers, many low-income, are involved in civil cases without legal representation. But the web portal aims to do more than just connect victims and families with prosecutors. The first phase of the project will involve a partnership with the University at Albany's Center for Human Services Research. Center Director Rose Green said UAlbany will conduct a survey of 500 cases to pinpoint what kinds of services are needed.
We're going to be looking at the types of help they are seeking, the types of help they are knowledgeable about that exist. We're going to be looking at their specific needs. So, for example, a domestic violence survivor might have needs in terms of housing and doesn't know where to go.
An advisory committee of crime victim advocates, community-based organizations, and local law enforcement officials will offer their input. Ann Erickson, president and CEO of the Empire Justice Center, which is also partnering with the state on the project, said having the organizations that work with victims and communities every day come together is an important step in the process. Erickson is also a member of WAMC's Board of Trustees.
And having those folks around the table who are in there on a day-to-day basis can help inform that so that whatever recommendations we come out with are going to be grounded in reality and will be able to be implemented in a practical way.
The state is also partnering with nonprofit Pro Bono Net. Once the assessment is completed over an 18-month period, the next phase will involve developing the tools to meet the needs identified.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1547. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.